For WBAA, I'm Betty Carson. Nick Schinkel, the director of the West Lafayette Public Library, brought in the book Bringing Nature Home, How You Can Sustain Wildlife with Native Plants by Douglas Tallamy. The publisher has written, quote, with the accelerating pace of development and subsequent habitat destruction, the pressures on wildlife populations are greater than ever. But there is a surprisingly important and relatively simple step toward reversing this alarming trend. Everyone with access to a patch of earth can make a significant contribution to sustaining biodiversity. Bringing Nature Home has sparked a national conversation about the link between healthy local ecosystems and human well-being, unquote. Nick Schinkel begins his review by reading from the book.
Occasionally, we encounter a concept so obvious and intuitive that we have never thought to articulate it, so close to our noses that we could not see it, so entangled with our everyday experiences that we did not recognize it. In this book, I address several such concepts. Primarily, the wild creatures we enjoy and would like to have in our lives will not be here in the future if we take away their food and the places they live. All plants are not created equal, particularly in their ability to support wildlife. So my central message is that unless we restore native plants to our suburban ecosystems, the future of biodiversity in the United States is dim. Well, that's the opening to Bringing Nature Home. And it's actually much more of an update read, as we'll find, than that introduction might lead you to believe. In the midst of the worst drought in decades, I thought it would be worth a look at a newfangled way of gardening and landscaping, a new way of thinking, and a new way of doing that takes our continent's changeable environment into account and works with the native plants and animals and other creatures we have, instead of featuring plants and designs that seek to put into place what we often don't have: lots and lots of regular rainfall and reasonably mild temperatures, at least not out here in the Midwest. Thus, today's book, Bringing Nature Home, How You Can Sustain Wildlife. What do I like most about Bringing Nature Home? Well, despite that introduction, it's the upbeat nature of the writing. Sure, there are moments of gloom and doom, we just heard one, with our author telling us that humans have largely destroyed the once sprawling native forests and grasslands of our continent, that much of our Native American wildlife is in real danger of extinction, or at least of near devastation, and that we sometimes feel, as individual gardeners and as landowners, that we are voices crying out in the wilderness. But then there are passages that read like this. It is not too late to save most of the plants and animals that sustain the ecosystems on which we ourselves depend, our author writes. Restoring native plants to most human-dominated landscapes is relatively easy to do. Our author writes to us with a definite personal point of view, which encourages us to take him seriously and read more attentively. He speaks from his own family's experience with gardening and landscaping with the native natural world in mind, having taken up just this activity on his and his wife's own several acres in southeastern Pennsylvania, about which he writes, gardeners enjoy their hobby for many reasons: a love of plants and nature, the satisfaction that comes from beautifying home and community, the pleasures of creative effort, the desire to collect rare or unusual species, and the healthful benefits of exercise and outdoor air. For some people, like my wife and me, there's pleasure in just watching plants grow. In 2000, my wife and I moved to 10 acres in southeastern Pennsylvania. The area had been farmed for centuries before being subdivided and sold to people like us who wanted a quiet rural setting close to work. Well, we got our rural setting, sort of, but it was anything but the slice of nature we were seeking. Like many open spaces in this country, at least 35% of the vegetation on our property, yes, I measured it, consisted of aggressive plant species from other continents that were rapidly replacing what native plants we did have. We quickly agreed to make it a family goal to rid the property of alien plants, to replace them with a forest species that had evolved within the eastern deciduous biome over many millions of years. This rather optimistic and, I admit, peculiar use of our spare time has put us in intimate contact with the plants on our property, both alien and native, and with the wildlife that depends on these plants. The writing, you see, is pretty darn good. Our author, Douglas Tallamy, has a well-honed story to tell a cause to champion, and he does so with controlled passion and an eye towards keeping our interest piqued from line to line in chapter to chapter. There are those little moments, those little sparks of humor that pop up here and there. Tellamy gives us plenty of reasons to be upbeat, perhaps even optimistic about the effect we can have on the natural world around us, that we, as individuals, as well as communities, can make a positive difference in supporting native wildlife, i.e. plants and animals, by cultivating our own little piece of earth. We can help to nurture the natives and have a beautiful yard and garden as a result. And while he insists this is not a how-to book, Tellamy does give us plenty of examples that we don't need to depend solely or even largely on non-native exotics to create beauty and interest in the land we garden in, from his own experience and from that of others he highlights throughout the book. Bringing nature home then offers us so much to learn. Our author makes a good case throughout the book that insects, of all creatures, are a vital, perhaps the vital element, which allows all other animal life on our continent to thrive. When native insects can thrive in our environment, even at the expense of some of our garden beauty, then native birds and mammals and fish can thrive too. Now, yes, our author is an entomologist by training, so he has a certain bias when it comes to his fascination with insects, and the copious color illustrations throughout the book point to that bias. But he backs up his statements about the ultimate or at least penultimate importance of insects in our world with arguments like these. As he writes, "I cannot overemphasize how important insect herbivores are to the health of all terrestrial ecosystems. These species are collectively very good at converting plant tissue of all types to insect tissue, and as a consequence, they also excel at providing food in the form of themselves for other species. In fact, a large percentage of the world's fauna depends entirely on insects to access the energy stored in plants. Birds are a particularly good example of such organisms. Nearly all terrestrial birds raise their young on insects, not seeds, not berries. The bluebird nourishes its young with herbivorous insects that have captured the energy stored by plants. And no wonder. Insects are unusually nutritious. Pound for pound, most insect species contain more protein than beef, and their bodies are extremely high in valuable energy. The Pulitzer Prize-winning author and renowned ecologist E.O. Wilson has called insects, quote, the little things that run the world, end quote, in part because of their role in transferring energy from plants to other animals that cannot eat plants directly. In sum, if we want to have members of higher trophic levels in our managed ecosystems, we must also have their primary food source, insects. And you can guess where that goes. Now, Tellamy notes that, yes, non-native plants and animals can adapt well to our American environment, and indeed many have become part of the natural as well as the normal garden landscape as a result. But, he points out at the same time, that these non-native plants' abilities to nurture and encourage native insect and other animal life will take centuries, perhaps millennia, to develop. And in the meantime, these non-native plants are literally starving many native insects and the animals that cannot or will not feed upon them out of existence. As our author writes, does this mean that insect specialists are never able to eat and reproduce on alien plants? No, there are specialists that have adopted an alien plant species as a host after a relatively short period of exposure to the plant. And he then gives a couple of examples where this seems to be the case. And then goes on to say, it is by no means guaranteed that insect specialists from North America can use all aliens that are related to their native host plants. But almost all cases in which aliens have been adapted by native specialists involve plants closely related to the insect's native host species. Unfortunately, many alien plants are not closely related to any plant species in North America. Plants such as English ivy, gold rain tree, crepe myrtle, European privet, katsura tree, empress tree, chocolate vine, and dozens more species in the ornamental trade are not related to any lineage of plants in North America. It is highly unlikely that insect specialists will be able to use such plants any time soon. Well, why should we care, really, if native plants, insects, birds, animals, fish thrive or if they disappear? It's about more than just the sentimental desire to hold onto the vanishing history of our continent. As Tellamy writes, my argument for using native plant species moves beyond debatable values and ethics into the world of scientific fact. We can no longer hope to coexist with other animals if we continue to wage war on their homes and food supplies. This simple tenet provides an imperative, particularly for the bird and butterfly lovers among us, to fight invasive aliens as if it really matters, and to reevaluate our centuries-old love affair with alien ornamentals. Beyond providing a challenge to ecologically minded gardeners, I believe that gardening with natives can create plantings that will stay beautiful and in the balance without the use of pesticides. Gardening with natives is no longer just a peripheral option favored by vegetarians and erstwhile hippies. It is an important part of a paradigm shift in our shaky relationship with the planet that sustains us, one that mainstream gardeners can no longer afford to ignore. Well, living in the world of the practical rather than the utopian, Tallamy states something not so obvious to many of us as well. It certainly wasn't obvious to me. In the 21st century, it is high time we realize and act on the knowledge that our North American suburbs and cities are now the keys to the survival of those very native plants and animals Tallamy is encouraging us to work with and to work for. Why? Why cities and suburbs of all places? Well, in the past one or at most 200 years, humans in North America have chopped down the expansive and interconnected forests and grasslands that led to the interconnected development of our native flora and fauna over many centuries, a destruction of the natural world which has resulted in the development of fringe forests and fringe grasslands. These fringe or remnant areas that we have embraced as our last chance to save the ecology of our continent that was here prior to 1492 or so. Yet despite our best intentions and our best efforts aimed at maintaining and even expanding these remnant fringe woods and grasslands, he contends that we are developing forested and grassed areas that are very different in their ecologies from those huge swaths of forest and grassland in which native insects and wildlife and plants developed over eons past. So, while it is good to preserve small wooded lots and grasslands, our author offers that the environments we are saving and recreating are not nearly large enough in scope or wide enough in their interconnectedness to keep native species living and reproducing in healthy numbers. Finally, what to do? Well, as the book encourages us, bring nature home. That's what we are to do. Bring nature home with us. As Tallamy concludes, because life is fueled by the energy captured from the sun by plants, it will be the plants that we use in our gardens that determine what nature will be like 10, 20, 50 years from now. If we continue to landscape predominantly with alien plants that are toxic to insects, the most important herbivores in our suburban ecosystems in terms of passing energy from plants to other animals, we may witness extinction on a scale that exceeds what occurred when a meteor struck the Yucatan Peninsula at the end of the Cretaceous period. If instead we use plants that evolved with our local animal communities as the foundation of our landscapes, we may be able to save much of our biodiversity from extinction. In essence, we will for the first time coexist with nature rather than compete with her. For the past century, we have created our gardens and our landscapes with one thing in mind, aesthetics. Yet if we designed our buildings the way we design our gardens with only aesthetics in mind, they would fall down. Just as buildings need support structures, girders, I-beams, and headers to hold the graceful arches and beautiful lines of fine architecture in place, our gardens, our yards, need native plants to support a diverse and balanced food web essential to all sustainable ecosystems. To me, the choice is clear. The costs of increasing the percentage and biomass of natives in our suburban landscapes are small, and the benefits are immense. Increasing the percentage of natives in suburbia is a grassroots solution to the extinction crisis. To succeed, we do not need to invoke governmental action. We do not need to purchase large tracts of pristine habitat that no longer exist. We do not need to limit ourselves to sending money to national and international conservation organizations and hoping it will be used productively. Our success is up to each one of us individually. We can each make a measurable difference almost immediately by planting a native nearby. As gardeners and stewards of our land, we have never been so empowered, and the ecological stakes have never been so high. Bringing nature home How You Can Sustain Wildlife, read from, I must say, an ebook reader for this week's review, and I'll certainly have comments on that at some later time. This book is available in e-form and in print form at all of our fine local public libraries, including, of course, the West Lafayette Public Library.
That was Nick Schinkel, the director of the West Lafayette Public Library. He's reviewed David Tallamy's expanded and revised edition of the book Bringing Nature Home, How You Can Sustain Wildlife with Native Plants, published by Timber Press.